Welcome, Fergal, to the Making Connections podcast. Thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Oh, thanks for having me. We're looking forward to it.
Yeah, no, I'm very, very excited. And I know a lot of listeners should be very excited because you bring a lot of experience to the podcast. So it'll be really interesting to hear your story to where you got to now in terms of where you started from. So I wanted to start the podcast with you introducing yourself, letting the viewers know how long you've been a kin and sort of what you do in your current role as a kinesiologist.
Sure. So my name is Fergal O'Hagan. I'm currently on faculty in the Department of Psychology at Trent University and also in our new kinesiology program. I've been a kin for a little over three decades, I guess. And yeah, I started practicing, back in the late 80s. I've held progressive positions through public and private sector rehabilitation, mainly in the area of occupational rehab, before I started focusing more on academics, so teaching and research, which has been my main focus probably over the last 10 years, I guess.
Nice.
Yeah.
So yeah, let's think about starting from the beginning, wherever you feel that is. How did you get to where you are now in terms of, your journey to working at Trent?
Yeah, well, I guess when you asked about that sort of early experiences, I always had a strong interest in physical activity, early day sport, and sort of sport and physical activity or sport participation as a vehicle for health, yeah. And also, performance and competition, but really got more into it as a lifestyle in high school, I guess, and then decided that I initially was going to go into teaching. So, way back in the day, it was mostly physical education programs. So I did my undergrad at University of Saskatchewan in physical education. And then I went on to do my master's degree at MAC in exercise physiology. My interest changed over my undergrad degree and I got more interested in the academic side of things. So I studied under Digby Sale at MAC and he was doing some of the early work on strength training and hypertrophy. Mm-hmm. Muscle hypertrophy. And so did my master's looking at differential effects of strength training programs in young adults, and then decided, I wanted to get my feet wet in the area of practice. So moved on from there, and after a period of time, I secured a position at the University of Regina. So I'm originally from Saskatchewan, grew up in Saskatchewan, went back out west and worked at a center. It was a service center at the university, and it was a cool place to work as a kin, sort of getting started. Like the profession and the name Spencer really wasn't in play at that time,
Yeah, I feel like it really wasn't a thing for a bit. So what was it like? Was it called kinesiology, or was it practicing kinesiologist has been a thing that's kind of thrown around, but not sure what that would have been called, just physical education more related? I don't know.
So the term that our professional title at the University of Regina was exercise consultant.
Okay.
And I know that subsequently it, they call the people practicing their kins. It was when I moved to Ontario, moved back to Ontario, and I got a position at one of the hospitals here in Peterborough, as a kinesiologist. I was called a kinesiologist. As the exercise consultant, though, it was doing kin work. And it was a cool place to work because we had, I headed up the musculoskeletal interventions for arthritis and injury. And we had equipment there, like we had a Cybex and an Orthotron, and you know, we had the weight room. And so I did a lot of evaluation work. And but we also had a cardiac rehab program that I was able to sub in for, because we had a consultant who was in charge of that. And we had elite athlete testing, which I had done quite a bit of at MAC, because we had a contract with the national rowing team.
Okay.
And so we did the physiological testing for the rowers, like, you know, rowed in the Olympics, the men's eight champions from the 84 Olympics, and Silken Lauman came through the lab. And so there's a lot of that. So that was good. My rehab focus though really started when I came to Peterborough and started working at St. Joe's Hospital. In that environment, I was hired as a kin, and they really want, like, it was kind of like kin physio aid sort of thing.
I wasn't
big on that. So I quickly showed my value in functional assessment and exercise prescription and program management stuff, like quality management for program, to the point where, you know, basically my manager said, well, you don't have to worry about that other stuff. And so so that was good. I was there, so I had a patient load there. We had what was then called a WSIB or WCB community clinic.
Okay.
So this was kind of the first early active intervention program, or one of the first that was set up. And we had a community clinic. So I was seeing, you know, I had a patient load of probably like a couple of dozen people in my part of the program. The physios would see them for 2 weeks max, and then they could be in the program up to 6 weeks. Okay. And I ran what was called phase three of the program, which was all active rehab.
Nice.
And
yeah, so that's pretty similar to like what a lot of, even like some WSIB work I know before I worked more in a rehab setting, and that's what it sort of was with WSIB. Was beginning was physio, more, I mean, pain, range of motion, but then once you can get to the conditioning and rehabbing, that's when the kinesiologist myself would sort of take over for that part.
Yeah. And I mean, you probably did a lot of education with people too.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Because that was the other thing that you know, the other value I added was educating patients, you know, and putting together like structured education programs for, you know, body mechanics and pacing and posture and you know, joint protection, but also, you know, like stress management and sleep, and more lifestyle kinds of things. I could really see when I got in there, well, actually at the University of Regina, like I could really see the scope of what my education, the value it could provide to people, you know?
Yeah.
Because I think like one thing about kins is that they bring more of it's not a deficit model. And what I mean by deficit model is like the medical model is kind of a deficit model. Like you're treating deficits as opposed to enhancing function.
I know what you mean.
And so I think kins bring more of like an enhancement model and a functional model. And so that's what I think, that's the value that I started to add in that setting. And then the other thing was, you know, like through, I guess, my undergrad and my grad studies, You know, we had programs in where we had courses in program management, and of course, when you're coming from a physical activity background, you've done some coaching, and you know how to be a leader. And so I wound up managing, after a year and a half, I took on the management role in that WSIB clinic. And so I was, at that point, I was managing a team of physios and another couple of kins for a period of time.
Nice.
And we went through accreditation with the Institute for Work and Health, and, you know, got like three out of three stars, sort of, really, they're really impressed with the program. And I mean, I thought that we did a good job. Like we tracked our outcomes, like our return to work outcomes. We got good outcomes in terms of functional improvement. Our questionnaire measures and that indicated that people felt that they had better health related quality of life. So, then an opportunity came up to go into private practice with, two of the physios that I had worked with, who left the hospital they were working in a private clinic, one owned by one of them, two physicians, a couple of rheumatologists in town, an OT and a psychologist. So we got together and we opened a private practice called Wellness Works.
Okay.
And Wellness Works. So we focused on pain, chronic pain, occupational rehab. We saw people with, you know, we'd see people with mental health problems and sometimes mild head injuries. But our focus was like return to work.
Yeah.
And so we did a lot of work for WSIB, long-term disability insurers, auto insurance. There was more work at that time in that area. And, you know, so when practice ran for 20 years, started in 1993 and wrapped up in 2013.
So 20 years.
Good long run. And in that practice, what, like being in private practice is sort of affords the opportunity to do a number of different things. So along with the kin work, exercise therapy work, and education with the clients, I did a lot of functional assessment work. Got into, you know, more ergonomic and workplace stuff. We did some work with employers in the area around injury prevention. So it was exciting, you know. And
yeah, especially having that private practice, right? Being able to build that up, and you mean see it blossom. You mean, you said 20 years you guys had that all, so I'm sure that was really exciting. And at the time, right, I don't know what other kinesiologists were doing, if they were doing a lot of similar work, or if it really wasn't a thing for you. Like around that time, was that normal for kins to be sort of in that role, or and were they still called kins, or was it kind of dispersed where you saw this sort of work?
I think that's where you saw the profession really emerging. Like we had a lot to offer when it came to active rehab. And so you saw other folks assume positions of responsibility in, you know, in larger organizations. So I'm thinking of, you know, a colleague, Mike Affleck. If you know Mike, you know, he worked up to a management role in CBI.
Yeah, that's where I know him from, because I worked at CBI for a bit, and then I've heard of his name before.
Yeah. So you saw people, Kins, taking more responsibility on and taking leadership roles in larger companies. Angela Pereira, she had a private practice up in Bancroft. She has First Line Kins now. She had a private practice up in Bancroft. There were a lot of the community clinic system employed a lot of kinesiologists, and so there were, people doing similar things in those programs that I had done. And so that's when the first push came as well for regulation.
And so when that came around, were you still at WellnessWorks, one? And then two, did it change your practice at all in terms of what you were doing or what you were able to do?
So most of the time at WellnessWorks was during the time when the push for regulation was on. And I was invited by the government committee that was looking at regulation for kinesiology. I was invited as a contributor to that. And so they were doing like an inquiry, basically. The committee was interviewing members of the public, professional kinesiologists, representatives from other professions, so physios and OTs, RMTs, to figure out first, should kinesiology be regulated? And then second, if yes, then how? And so that stuff was going on. So the first application for regulation happened in the 80s. And at that time, and I think it was around 86, and there were like, it was just a handful of people really, back then. Then there was another application in 93. Both of those were turned down. So when I remember the 93 application, people were pretty, they were disappointed. They were a bit, dejected. And it really took the wind out of our sails, I think. Because we felt like we were gaining respect and had a foothold in the health system, especially in rehab. So, but I mean, people didn't kind of let it go at from there, right? So you had like a continual push on. And we were getting more political, I guess. There's certain folks that had ins in the government that Connie, ooh,
Connie Glenn.
Connie Glenn. Yes, thank you. Yeah, so Connie was a big, she was a good political operator. And she had the ear of her. I think she lived down Oakville way, and she had the ear of her MPP, who I think was in opposition at that time. But liberals were elected to government in 203, and then by 207, the formal committee work had started for the regulation of kinesiology. So Connie had worked, and other people had as well, had worked hard over that time. Rod Hare was another one, had worked
Yeah, I
hard
think
over that
I've
time.
spoken with him as well before.
And I mean, it became evident that the government was favorable towards regulation after the hearings, after the initial hearings. And then so but it takes a long time. Man, like it takes, it took a couple of years for the act to be drawn up. It took, and then it took another couple of years for it to get you know, on the books and for, you know, sort of ascent occur. But I because I remember I was at the OKA meeting in Waterloo in 2007. Was it 2007, I think? Yeah, where they announced that kinesiology would be regulated. And it didn't happen until 2013, right?
Yeah. That's crazy. And I know when I think of those timelines, like those are long years between of waiting. And I see a lot of like kinesiologists, let's say, that I've been practicing for as long as a year that are newer or are looking for different changes to happen. But things at the higher level take time. And one of them I see is like, oh, like kinesiologists being covered by insurance providers more readily in employer plans, for example. Like, yeah, like that takes time because you're working at within these large companies that work tend generally very slowly toward things. So I understand. I could only imagine how long and probably how frustrating it was for a lot of you guys, but I'm sure for you and for all the people that you named, what it is now is crazy to think about that you guys started this, like you said, in 86. And then it's finally come to fruition in 2013, and then what, it's been 8 years, 7 years, whatever. And I mean, we're still looking at progressing it. I quickly just want to say like, thanks to you and like all those people that kind of helped make that happen for all the kinesiologists working out there now. So yeah, I can't even imagine waiting that long as you're trying to put your practice together.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, you know, there's sort of that aspirational side of things where you're visioning a better future for the profession.
Yeah.
But then there's the day to day, right?
Mm-hmm.
And how are you going to make a living, right? How are you going to get by?
Yeah.
And we did, you know, there was some pushback from physios and OTs on it. But to be honest with you, like the physios and OTs I worked with, and I mean, they were my business partners. Mm-hmm. And there were others like that I worked with over the years, and I supervised physios and that. They weren't antagonistic, you know, like, mm-hmm. you know, they saw a role, they saw a skill set that in some ways overlapped, but in you know, many ways was differentiated from theirs.
Yeah, you're going to get that across like a lot of health professions. I mean, so a little bit of overlap is, I mean, it's fine. It keeps everyone making sure they put in the best work too as well.
Yeah. Yeah, no, true. And I guess like in the early days, mm-hmm. What I brought into the physio clinic was like, you know, the exercise that was being prescribed at that time, it was like, well, do 10 reps, you know? Well, yeah. do 10 reps. So it was like, well, aren't you, you know, are you going to grade? Are you going to do any grading with this and look at any sort of assessment to see where their level of function is at so that you're, mm-hmm. you know, you're setting overload, you know, like mm-hmm. base, getting back to basic principles, right? Overload, yeah. progression, specificity, right? That's mm-hmm. the cornerstones of exercise physiology, right? So,
mm-hmm.
So that, you know, I was able to bring that in. Mm-hmm. And add value in that way. So the physios didn't really see me as a threat. Like they saw me as complementing what they did. And I was happy with that.
Yeah, and that's what I feel like a lot of allied health professions should sort of view different professions. I mean, they're all here to supplement your work. Yeah, there's going to be overlap and different skills that you have or tools that you use, but they're all complementary in terms of one people is maybe better suited for this sort of thing, whether that's, you know, kinesiologists and physios, or you have massage therapists that could do some very similar things, or you have, I've recently did a podcast with a podorthist So they're just more focused on more feet and biomechanics. So you have people that can do very similar things, but I think it is important to have that level of people are working together as a team. They have overlapping knowledge, which is good. So they have a baseline understanding of each other, but then each person can work more specifically in one area and better help the patient at the end of the day in that specific for what they need.
Yeah. And when you, so with Wellness Works and then subsequently, you know, went on to open another practice called Adaptive Healthcare Solutions. Mm-hmm. And we worked in a very interdisciplinary way. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they talk about people staying in their lanes kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Like in managing those practices, I really encourage people to, you know, if they saw something where they felt they could contribute to an aspect of patient care that maybe wasn't in their lane, I encourage them to do that. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think, like, for example, the psychologists that worked with us learned so much, I think, from having that eye on the patient's function. Mm-hmm. So keeping it real, I guess, keeping it real is how I would put it. Cause it took a long time to sort of train the psychologists to work in the occupational rehab setting, mm-hmm. to focus more on function, mm-hmm. less on symptoms and more on, I don't know if I like the term objectivity, mm-hmm. or sort of reality, mm-hmm. as opposed to simply relying on patient self-report.
Yeah.
So you know, we really encouraged an interdisciplinary environment, and I think all of the professions benefited from that.
Yeah. So as you worked through Wellness Works, then you moved on to Adaptive Healthcare Solutions. At some point, I know you start to teach a little bit, and that's kind of what led to where you are now. So I want to just quickly go over your journey, kind of teaching a little bit and how that's progressed to where you are now. And then I wanted to spend a little bit of time chatting about kind of your day-to-day in your current role.
Yeah, so my academic and sort of academic career, I'd wanted to go back and do my PhD for, I always wanted to do that, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
And I had the opportunity to go back and start in 2000 at U of T, okay. With Scott Thomas. And then the opportunity came. And my area of research was in rehabilitation. Okay. So my PhD was focused on actually return to work in cardiac patients.
Okay.
And so I studied folks who were in cardiac rehab, as well as folks from the workplace. And then started doing research there, connected with one of the faculty at Trent, and we started doing some research together. And she, a contract post came up to teach health psych, mm-hmm. and yeah. Deborah thought I'd be a great person to do that. And so I started teaching health psych, working at Trent, wound up moving into teaching statistics of all things, mm-hmm. And research design, and yeah. And then behavior modification, because of my patient background, right? And you know, I'd taken BMOD as an undergrad, and you work a lot with it yourself in your lifestyle programs and that.
Yeah, yeah.
So I could bring that perspective there, and mm-hmm. that part-time work worked into a full-time, initially a full-time contract position at Trent, and then full-time permanent position in the Department of Psychology, where I continue to work and do research and still in the area of return to work, but I also do some work in concussion prevention and management, more mm-hmm. from the perspective of public perceptions of concussion. Okay. So what people think and feel about concussion and how that influences their behavior, athletes, mm-hmm. parents, and other stakeholders. And then was invited to be on the committee to start a new kinesiology program at Trent.
Nice.
So we started working on that in 2016, built the program, really focused it on the KSAs for kinesiology, like our competencies. Mm-hmm. So we basically looked at the college's competencies and built the program up on that.
Nice.
And so we started our first kin cohort in the fall of 2020.
So that's brand new.
Brand spanking new. Now, I have to say, we had a two-year transfer program going with Ontario Tech for a few years. So, but what happened was the students who were in that program, they all just decided to stay at Trent. Mm. So we're actually graduating some students this year, despite just having started. Mm-hmm. And it's really exciting. Like, you know, I've been working mostly like work with them in sports psych, and at this point. And then, you know, those students would, you know, you'd see them in health psychology, behavior modification, taking, you know, the psych courses. Mm-hmm. And so it's really cool. It's really cool to have been in on that.
Yeah. Because I know I work really closely with my company, Kimformation, helping students pass the exam. And one of the things is, I mean, a lot of schools now are starting to incorporate some courses that are more focused on the core competencies of the college. So it'll be really interesting to see students who graduate from this kinesiology program that's been more looked at from the college perspective, how well they would do on like the exam, because depending on different schools, I mean, their kinesiology schools came from physical education background and maybe haven't changed as much, and those are typically the schools that don't do as well, if I can recall correctly, on the exam, because it isn't as focused on what the exam is looking for, which is more practical knowledge in terms of the standards and guidelines, jurisprudence, core competency, and all that thing. So it'll be really interesting to see that data, because I know the college does release that data in terms of what school you came from, what's the graduation success rate on what exam, and you definitely see the differences between the schools.
Yeah. So what we did at Trent is we set up so in the fourth year, there's a placement option, and there's a research thesis option. Mm-hmm. For the placement option, the students have to take a course that covers jurisprudence and professional practice.
Okay.
And so it's all the college stuff that relates to that. And then they have to do that before they go out into their professional practice setting where they are for the term, basically.
Yeah, which makes sense. You kind of, and that's where I know here at Western, I do take on a few like clinical kinesiology students, because they have that stream now at Western, and they're in classes about, I mean, chronic disease prevention and management exercises, or they're looking at classes about entrepreneurship in kinesiology, or they're looking at classes like you're saying that have that jurisprudence, standards and guidelines before they go into a placement, because that's the I'll say the meat and potatoes of one, the exam, but two, how you should act as a professional. That's like the baseline things that almost any healthcare professional should be aware and really know well those competencies and all those guidelines and standards.
Yeah, because I mean, if I could say one thing, Spencer, about, you know, back in the day, like we had to learn that was just all on us, right?
Yeah,
nobody was there. Right? There were no, you know, there were no mentors, there were no models. One of my most proud accomplishments actually was being the OKA Mentor of the Year in 2010, having mentored a whole bunch of kins. And, you know, a big part of that was helping them, you know, walk the path that I, you know, kind of had to walk, you know what I mean? Like sort of break that trail.
I wonder does OKA still do that? I know I spoke with Steve Fisher the other day, and he was saying how they have like mentor moments, and I was like on a video with I think Devin at the time, who was a past president, and there was just like mentor moments, like talking about things. But I don't know if they actually do that anymore, because that'd be interesting to revisit that, because if you felt like it brought a lot of value, I'm sure in today's day and age, as I think I saw a post the other day, the OKA posted how they have the most memberships they've ever had. You're going to have more and more of these young kinesiologists joining, whether they're students right now as kinesiology students, or they're young coming first into practice. Like having that mentor would be very important to learn from. And that only helps the profession tremendously. Yeah.
And recognizing the mentors in the profession, Spencer. You know, like, having the opportunity to recognize the work that you're doing with those clinical stream students from Western. Mm-hmm. That's important, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
To give those folks a hand up, and to be, you know, to be recognized for that. So,
yeah. So what I wanted to switch over to now is we got an idea about what you do in your role. Obviously, you did your PhD, now you're teaching and helping to develop the kinesiology program. It'll be really interesting to hear that, how that fully pans out. But now that, we've looked at your whole, we'll say, career as a kinesiologist, obviously it's still going on. I wanted to get an idea of your overall experience as a kinesiologist, because you had to go through all the trials and tribulations. You took the long way to get where you are now. Whereas people like me, I kind of came into it and didn't really have to have as many struggles. So I wanted to get your overall experience as a kinesiologist. And two was, I'm really curious to hear why you still have your RKIN, even though maybe you don't need it, and the importance for that, for you to still have that in your name or in your title.
Yeah.
So yeah, in your experience.
Yeah, I mean, both good questions. So maybe I'll speak to the why I still have my RKIN.
Sure.
Part of it, I guess, is just the struggle, Spencer. Like, the struggle that we went through to get that designation.
You worked hard for that.
Right?
Yeah.
And, you know, the fact that I want to maintain that, that recognition, that title, but I also want to, you know, maintain my professional standard in terms of, you know, the students that I'm working with at Trent now.
Yeah.
The people that I'm connecting with in my research, you know, so I did a talk the other day for at a virtual conference on return to work, where I was presenting research on, you know, stakeholder collaboration during return to work, which is a very big, it's a big part of rehab. And so, and I identified myself as a kinesiologist as well as a professor and researcher. And there's also a part of it that, you know, it continues to be about mentorship and modeling and showing, you know, young kins that there is something in this, right? There is a career to be had, and you can move along and progress along through the profession If you asked me when I was finishing up my master's or my undergrad, if I would be, you know, a psychology professor or let's say a kinesiologist working in a psychology department, mm-hmm. teaching statistics, and it would be like, what, you know? Like,
yeah.
You know what I mean? But, mm-hmm. But you know, just sort of reflecting on the path that I've walked. And I think it's the same, like when you're trained to be a physio, mm-hmm. you're a physio, right? Yeah. When you're trained to be a teacher, you're a teacher. When you're trained to be, you know, you are that label, right?
Yeah.
But when kins are trained, like both the blessing and the bane of being a kin is you can do so many things, right? You're kind of spoiled for choice. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, you know, young kins, I think, have a lot of anxiety around that. And I, you know, mm-hmm. I did too.
That's definitely something I say all the time, that as a kinesiologist, like you can do so much. And it's also a blessing and a curse because like you can go into all these different streams and avenues and don't have to focus on one thing. But at the same time, I always speak on a lot of like public knowledge as more challenging because kinesiologists put on so many hats that you visit a kinesiologist in one hat, but then you meet another one and as a general public, you're confused because I thought kinesiology does this because it's so broad. The marketing aspect of kinesiology becomes a lot more challenging because it's so broad that you can't say, oh, I have this problem, so I need a kinesiologist. Not all the time, sometimes. But yeah, anyways, that's my own thought with that.
No, and I mean, that debate happened, is still probably happening. Yeah. You know, at the college, for example, there was debate around whether we should have specialized streams,
mm-hmm.
you know, like whether we should have, you know, an ergonomist mm-hmm. stream, whether we should have a clinical stream. I don't know if we're finished with that debate. So,
yeah. But yeah, in terms of obviously you kind of spoke there on why you kept our kin. I definitely agree with sort of what you're saying. You worked hard for it, one, but two, it shows that you're still practicing and you still believe in all the things that you need to keep doing. But as you sort of reflect back now, and you spoke a little bit on your experience as a kin, and how you've enjoyed it, and you've worked really hard to get where you are now. I wanted to get an idea now looking the other way. So from your point of view and your experience, where do you see the future of kinesiology going as a profession? If you were to say, hey, Spencer, in the next little bit, like this is where I can see it going, like maybe that's where you should look toward, or what are some interesting things for us to keep an eye on that you think kinesiology is progressing toward?
So our tagline for the Trent Kinesiology Program, which I coined, is nice. Health and performance across the lifespan.
Okay.
And I'm going to give your situation as an example of that, where you're working with older adults, mm-hmm. right? You're trying to maintain function. So when you work with them, an absence of a deficit, mm-hmm. if you can keep them kind of plateaued, leveled in terms of their function, that's your win, eh?
Mm-hmm.
And let's say gains, but over mm-hmm. time, you want them to maintain their function. On the other end of the scale, high performance, you know, athletics. So where a lot of kins are working in as you know, and have developed expertise in high performance training.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I guess I see the future as functional. Like I see wherever there's a need to support human functioning and well-being, okay. there's going to be a role for kinesiology. I I probably see more specialization in those areas where people in practice, and it's really important because context is king. Like, you know, you have to really understand the context in which you're practicing to understand the behaviors that you need to elicit from your clients to achieve your goals. And I think one of the things that we need to keep in mind as kinesiologists, or one of the things that we need to orient towards, like a lot of times, you know, and we're trained to do this, we use sort of physiological and biomechanical models in our work. I think we need to keep in mind, and not even keep in mind, like exercise, physical activity, they're enacted behaviors, right? In order for you to see benefit from an exercise program, people have to be doing it.
Yeah.
You know, the technical aspect of doing it with proper form, and that's sure, that's important.
For sure, yeah.
But we need to be, and I think we can be, as kinesiologists, because we have that positive orientation towards things, we can be very proficient in engaging people in physical activity and keeping them engaged, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And that's one thing that we talked about before the show, was like the health coaching aspect, because that's what you asked about in terms of my work, right? You have to have all that physiological background to, you know what I mean, make the right choices for what they do. But at the end of the day, they still need to do it, and they need to do it consistently to maintain or improve their health. So it becomes a battle of, it isn't just like a short-term thing, it's a long-term game as well. So what aspects can you change in their lifestyle that will help modify it for the better? Whether that's predominantly probably exercise, but also, you mean, other lifestyle modifications that can improve their overall health. So yeah, I definitely can see kinesiologists going in sort of that direction with a lot of their work.
And the other value I think we bring is that program orientation. So, you know, we're like, there's a big push on for evidence-based practice.
Yeah.
There's a big push on for looking at outcomes.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I think our profession is very, you know, like we're, you know, I say process as well, but we're, you know, we're outcome oriented.
Yeah. So I think that has to do with a lot with like the work you came from, with even probably started early with the occupational rehab. Like, that's sort of what you measure when you're doing reporting as well. So that's something that you have to report to the insurance provider or whoever. So that's sort of how you practice. And that's sort of what I've moved away toward even my own practices. Yeah, you have those metrics to, I mean, keep them accountable with some things, but there's also other subjective things that you have to put into effect. And it's not just improving this score and getting the score higher. Yeah, sure, it helps the track improvement, but there's other, outcome measures that aren't numbers that will show how people's improved, whether that's
for
their
sure
mental health, their mental state, other sort of things that you can't really out and out measure, but it's really a subjective call based on how they feel or how, what they're doing.
Yeah. And I think those are totally legit, you know, and, and like the best outcome is when your client meets their own goals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. By what they, whether that's, for me, it's being able to pick up their grandchild, for example, and take them up the stairs safely. I can't measure that. Like, I could do exercises to help do that or emulate that, or, get them to practice that, like a work hardening program or something. But at the end of the day, it's very different for the person.
Yeah. Yeah. No, and I just, I saw a paper where they asked people with you know, major depressive episodes about what was important to them in terms of their condition improving. And the biggest thing that they talked about was returning to work, you know, like, so it's their engagement in their life is the most important thing to people, right?
Yeah. Especially for a lot of people who maybe identify themselves as their occupation. They're like, oh, what are you? I'm this job. I mean, I'm a nurse, I'm a teacher. And you mean they lose that identity as well. So I see that a lot as well. When I see some clients who maybe are more recently retired, they still say that, oh, I'm a teacher. But, oh, sorry, I actually retired 2 years ago, but they identify as that. So now it's like they have other goals or other things that they need to aspire toward. But what I wanted to do here to sort of wrap up the call was to give you an opportunity here to leave any advice that you maybe give to some of your kinesiology students that you talked with at Trent, or any advice for any new kinesiologists that you mean they've written the exam and they're like, now what? What kind of words of wisdom can you kind of spread, let them know about, and what we can finish off with that?
Okay. So some of the things that I've found helpful in practicing, and like especially with folks with chronic pain problems, but all kinds of health problems in rehabilitation, is so there's an approach to, I'm going to say, therapy, but also an approach to life called acceptance and commitment training or therapy. And I'd encourage listeners and young practitioners to gain some knowledge in that area, because basically, you know, the premise is that we, you know, as humans, part of the human condition is to experience pain, experience anxiety, experience a lot of things that can keep us away from moving towards our valued life activities. And what the ACT approach sort of does is emphasizes the person that, you know, these are experiences that are part of the normal range of human experience. And can we work with those experiences and still move toward what we value in life? There's a number of resources. So Stephen Hayes is a big, you know, big name in this area. Mm-hmm. But there are a number of like books that explain it in simple terms. So I'd invite people to look into that. And the other thing I'd invite people to focus on is what we do, like exercise as behavior, I guess. Mm-hmm. So not, you know, getting out of the purely physiological and biomechanical models that we can find ourselves working in, and remember that when people exercise, they're enacting, above all, really, they're enacting behavior. And so what, you know, what are the rules that govern behavior? You know,
looking at from that perspective as well.
Yeah. And how can you encourage your clients and use clever behavioral strategies to help your clients develop lifelong strategies for healthy living, like you're like you're doing with your clients, right? So
so for all the listeners or viewers, I'll make sure I'll speak with Fergal after, if he has any sort of book recommendations or, you know, blog posts or articles. I'll make sure to link them down in the description about the ACT, what he was talking about there. If you guys find that interesting, I definitely know I'll check it out after the show today and kind of read that up, because that is really interesting. And yeah, I totally agree with what you're saying. Like, that's what I'm doing in my practice. I have the clinical aspect, but also I have that, you mean, behavior modification aspect, and like probably closer to the psychology of what behavior change comes from. And like you said, exercise as a behavior and viewing it that way as well. So Thank you so much, Fertil, for spending the time. It's what been an hour now. It's always crazy how fast the time flies when we're chatting on these shows. But I just wanted to say a quick thank you for coming on the show today. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, and I thank you, Spencer, for doing this work, because I think this work is so important for our profession. And it's something I'm going to be taking, like, this podcast is going to be something students are going to be introduced to in our courses. So
making connections is going to be part of the Trent kinesiology program. Thanks.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. I try to talk to a bunch of professors too, because I mean, I find this is a really good resource, because it's something, I mean, I would have loved as a student. I mean, it's like, hey, listen to this podcast or this resource. I mean, as you start to, you know, figure out what specialties you're going to go into, because I try to interview, I mean, very unique and different kinesiologists in all these different streams, whether it's ergonomists, you mean professors, you mean podorthists, you mean they have more of a strength and conditioning background, or maybe they're more in cardiac rehab. So there's so many different things. So yeah, definitely share it for any viewers and maybe other professors or new people that haven't watched the show, because you saw Fergal's on it. So please share with anyone. And I'm always looking for some more guests on the show. So if you guys do know any other registered kinesiologists that would be good fit for this podcast, you can comment them below. I know I'm going to be starting to release these on YouTube and on our different socials. So I'd love to hear from you guys. You can also send us an email at makingconnections@gmail.com. But yeah, thank you, Fergal, so much. Any of the links, like I said, the things we talked about will be down in the show notes. But thank you again, everyone, for listening or watching now. Have a great day and stay safe out there from the Making Connections team.